As Louis prepared to start Torrance High, he was looking less like an impish kid and more like a dangerous young man. High school would be the end of his education. There was no money for college. Anthony's paycheck ran out before the week's end, forcing Louise to improvise meals out of eggplant, milk, stale bread, wild mushrooms, and rabbits that Louis and Pete shot in the fields. With flunking grades and no skills, Louis had no chance for a scholarship. It was unlikely that he could land a job. The Depression had come, and the unemployment rate was nearing 25%. Louis had no real ambitions. If asked what he wanted to be, his answer would have been cowboy. In the 1930s, America was infatuated with the pseudoscience of eugenics and its promise of strengthening the human race by culling the unfit from the genetic pool. Along with the feeble-minded, insane, and criminal, those so classified included women who had sex out of wedlock, considered a mental illness, orphans, the disabled, the poor, the homeless, epileptics, masturbators, the blind and the deaf, alcoholics, and girls whose genitals exceeded certain measurements. Some eugenicists advocated euthanasia, and in mental hospitals, this was quietly carried out on scores of people through lethal neglect or outright murder. At one Illinois mental hospital, new patients were dosed with milk from cows infected with tuberculosis, in the belief that only the undesirable would perish. As many as 4 in 10 of these patients died. A more popular tool of eugenics was forced sterilization, employed on a raft of lost souls who, through misbehavior or misfortune, fell into the hands of state governments. By 1930, when Louis was entering his teens, California was enraptured with eugenics and would ultimately sterilize some 20,000 people. When Louis was in his early teens, an event in Torrance brought reality home. A kid from Louis's neighborhood was deemed feeble-minded, institutionalized, and barely saved from sterilization through a frantic legal effort by his parents, funded by their Torrance neighbors. Tutored by Louis's siblings, the boy earned straight A's. Louis was never more than an inch from juvenile hall or jail, and as a serial troublemaker, a failing student, and a suspect Italian, he was just the sort of rogue that eugenicists wanted to cull. Suddenly understanding what he was risking, he felt deeply shaken. The person that Louis had become was not, he knew, his authentic self. He made hesitant efforts to connect to others. He scrubbed the kitchen floor to surprise his mother, but she assumed that Pete had done it. While his father was out of town, Louis overhauled the engine of the family's Marmon Roosevelt straight-eight sedan. He baked biscuits and gave them away. When his mother, tired of the mess, booted him from her kitchen, he resumed baking in a neighbor's house. He doled out nearly everything he stole. He was big-hearted, said Pete. Louis would give away anything, whether it was his or not. Each attempt he made to right himself ended wrong. He holed up alone, reading Zane Grey novels and wishing himself into them, a man and his horse on the frontier, broken off from the world. He haunted the theater for Western movies, losing track of the plots while he stared at the scenery. On some nights, he'd drag his bedding into the yard to sleep alone. On others, he'd lie awake in bed beneath pinups of movie cowboy Tom Mix and his wonder horse Tony, feeling snared on something from which he couldn't break free. In the back bedroom, he could hear trains passing. Lying beside his sleeping brother, he'd listen to the broad, low sound, faint, then rising, faint again, then a high, beckoning whistle, then gone. The sound of it brought goosebumps. Lost in longing, Louis imagined himself on a train, rolling into country he couldn't see, growing smaller and more distant, until he disappeared.